What's up, first thing first listeners? It's your boy Shay Sharp, co-host of FS1's Undisputed. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast, Club Shay Shay, where we always do something before two something. Each week, I sit down with a guest for a drink and conversation, and as host and proprietor of Club Shay Shay, I welcome in esteemed guests such as Snoop Dogg, Floyd Money Mayweather, LeVar Ball, Isaiah Thomas, just to mention a few. Whether I'm talking to an athlete, a musician, an actor, or a lifelong friend, Club Shay Shay is a place where people share inspiring and motivational stories about their journeys to prominence. The new episode drops every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to Club Shay Shay now and make sure you never miss a new episode. Now, back to first things first.
All right, we're back talking Tom Brady. TB12 Sports posted this picture on Instagram of Tom Brady already back at work on the practice field just 6 days after winning Super Bowl 55. One of the many reasons he is the GOAT quarterback. Jason, what are the chances, in your opinion, of Brady getting the Bucs back to the Super Bowl and winning ring number 8?
Can I go with slim, Chris? Can I say slim chances of returning? By the way, I saw Brady post that on the gram. Somehow he doesn't follow me on Instagram. I'm shocked. But Chris, I got issues with this team. First of all, this is a crazy stat that I saw. It's mind-boggling. Every player who scored a touchdown for the Bucs in the Super Bowl is up as a free agent. We don't know if Gronk's coming back. We don't know about Antonio Brown. We don't know about Leonard Fournette. And then you look at the bigger picture, guys. Chris Godwin is going to command top dollar. He's their best receiver. No disrespect to Mike Evans. Look at one of their great linebackers. Lavonte David's a free agent. I mean, Shaq Barrett, who dominated the postseason. He eviscerated the Packers and Patrick Mahomes. He's a free agent. So the Bucs have a lot to do. And remember, repeating is super difficult in the NFL. Ask the Kansas City Chiefs, who were basically hung over for the entire season, struggling to get back to the Super Bowl. I know they were great record-wise, but they didn't look the part. And then they get there and they get smashed. So, I know the odds, the gambling odds, currently have Tampa Bay as the favorite to come out of the NFC. We know the Saints are going to take a big step back with the Drew Brees likely retirement. The Packers have a brutal schedule. You know, I think the team to watch is the LA Rams with Matt Stafford. I know that not everybody's a fan of Stafford and he's never won a playoff game, but if Tom Brady has a team to worry about in the NFC, I believe it's the LA Rams.
Well, first, let me say this. Anytime you talk about Brady and the Bucs next year, you've got to throw this caveat out there. He'll be 44 years old. And when a guy's that old, he could fall off at any moment. You don't know when it's coming. I'm not predicting it, but it's possible. And typically with quarterbacks, it happens in a hurry. Remember Peyton Manning? 39 touchdowns, 4,700 yards. And then the next season, 9 touchdowns, 2,200 yards. It can come quickly. So that's always a possibility. But barring that, Jason, assuming Tom Brady is Tom Brady and as good as he was this year, I couldn't disagree with you more. All right, I think the team to beat right now, the favorite in the NFC right now, should be Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. They're going to be better. They're going to be better. He will be second year in a system with Bruce Arians, second year out of New England, and he'll be more comfortable as good as he looked this year, obviously. The players will be more comfortable with him. And I get that there's typically a Super Bowl hangover for some of these teams. But Tom Brady has not had that in his career. And I think him posting this picture on Instagram was a message to his teammates that, guys, we got work still to be done. If I have 7 rings and I'm still going hard after another championship, the rest of you should be as hungry as ever. So I think that was a message, and that's one of the strengths of Brady, his leadership, his intangibles, and this was an example of that. You're right. You mentioned some free agents. They got to bring back Shaq Barrett. No question about it. You'd love to bring back Lavonte David, but he might be out of there, and that could hurt. But I think the defense will still be fine. They'll be better. The young quarterbacks who look bad at times this season are going to be more confident based on what they did in the playoffs. Devin White is just going to get better. That dude is a stud. And you mentioned the guys that scored touchdowns in the Super Bowl. Who really, Jason, is going after Leonard Fournette? I mean, seriously, he got cut by Jacksonville. And I know he looked good for the Buccaneers, but nobody's going to give him big money. I think he could be back in Tampa Bay. Chris Godwin, I'd love to have him back, but I do remember a few drop passes as well in the postseason. So he may be gone. And if he is, nobody's giving Antonio Brown big money. They think the only place he'll behave himself is with Tom Brady. So I think they can bring him back, not at a huge dollar amount. And Gronk, again, who's paying Gronk big money at this stage of his career? They know he wants to play with Tom Brady. So I think they can bring those three guys back. Not huge money. I still got Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Scotty Miller, and remember the rookie, Tyler Johnson. He played well. So I think that they're going to be fine next year. Let me say this. The teams you mentioned that could challenge them. If Deshaun Watson comes to the NFC, say San Francisco, obviously they'd be a team that would give Tampa Bay trouble. And the Rams, I'm with you. I think they're going to be good. But I'm not ready to put them ahead of the Buccaneers because let's see what Matt Stafford can do.
Yeah, Chris, the one thing, and I do a gambling column for FoxSports.com. The one thing I wrote that you can't quantify is that hunger and that desire and that thirst to chase a championship. We know Brady had it big time. He wanted payback against Belichick. Gronk instantly comes out of retirement. Again, these guys are shoving it to Belichick. And on some level, obviously, they want to win, but they do want to prove to Belichick, hey, man, we don't need you. Okay, Antonio Brown wanted to prove to the Steelers, hey, man, you guys didn't want me. Okay, I'm coming out. I'm winning a Super Bowl. I'm scoring. Leonard Fournette, again, like you said, dumped by Jacksonville. It looked like his career was on the brink, even though he's in his mid-20s. But, Chris, I keep coming back to this. You mentioned 44. One of the great stat guys at First Things First just texted me. Only one quarterback has started two games at the age of 44, Vinny Testaverde. I know he wasn't on the TB12 diet. Obviously, I got to get on the TB12 website and order me some shakes so I can keep my off-season regimen working here. But this is going to be a very tall order for Brady to pull it off again at the age of 44. Again, there's really no – it's unprecedented what he did at 43. Can he do that again, Chris? Do you really believe one season removed from – you know, shoving his middle finger at Belichick. I just don't know that I see it again from Tom Brady.
You saw the photo. He's already at work. Look, I wouldn't be at work. Would you be at work 6 days after winning the Super Bowl?
I would.
You'd be chilling. I'd be on an island somewhere with Giselle. I mean, honestly, part of me is like, dude, it's crazy. All right? But he's crazy like a fox, Jason. It was a message to his teammates and to the rest of the league that I'm not done, and that's one of the things that's made him great. Look, you're right. As I said, he could fall off at any given moment. We have to leave that out there for a guy that's 44. But as you said, what he did this year was unprecedented. And when I look at the eye test, Jason, I didn't see anything that's going to make me think he's going to fall off. If his last year in New England,
Chris,
I would not have predicted he was going to lead the league in completions of 20 yards or more. I never would have thought he would have thrown the long ball like he did this season, but he looked great doing it. I know his mobility's never been good, so that's always a question. As long as the line can protect him, I think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for at least one more season that he will be good next year. I'm not predicting them as they'll win the NFC for sure, but right now I think they should legitimately be the favorite. I mean, Green Bay, how's it going to get better for Green Bay? This year it was set for Aaron Rodgers on a platter. All right, you had the home field advantage in Lambeau, maybe the greatest home field advantage in the league, and you still couldn't deliver. Your defense was good. You had the best receiver, arguably, in the league, and you still could not deliver. So I can't put them ahead of Tampa Bay at this point.
Just one quick thing, Chris. We saw Tom Brady go to Tampa and then say, hey, I need help. Get me Gronk. I want Antonio Brown. Bring him in. Let's go get Fournette. And we're already starting this offseason to see Aaron Rodgers very unhappy. Aaron Rodgers going to management. Hey, can you bring in somebody here? I need help. And we've seen Russell Wilson do it in the last week in Seattle. They are taking the Tom Brady / LeBron method of, hey, right, I'm a franchise guy here. I am very important. I want this. I need that if you guys want championships. So I think Brady will have, you know, a bit of a challenge to retain some of these talented guys who could hit free agency because other quarterbacks are going to chirp up just like Tom Brady did.
Godwin. That's it. I mean, look, does Russell Wilson say, I want Antonio Brown? I mean, maybe he thinks he might be able to control him and keep him on point. But they, DK Metcalf, their problem is not necessarily another receiver. So I just don't see a team paying big money to the three guys I mentioned, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, or Leonard Fournette. I think they'll be back in Tampa, and I think Tampa's got a great chance of getting back to the Super Bowl. But I'll tell you this. I think, Jason, there's a great chance of a repeat Super Bowl, a rematch. And in this rematch, if it happens, it's too early for me to make my prediction. But right now, I do feel good about a KC-Tampa Super Bowl again. And this time, I would pick Kansas City to win it.
Okay, Chris, it's time for you to unveil your NBA All-Star ballot. Guard, you are a voter. Let's start in the West. Who you got?
Yeah, in the West, the front court, I don't think you can argue with the front court. I mean, it's LeBron James, it's Kawhi Leonard, and it's Nikola Jokic. The back court is where it got tough. I got Steph Curry and Luka Doncic. All right. I feel bad about not having Damian Lillard on there. He's had a tremendous season. He's leading Portland to a great year, especially with CJ McCollum missing half the season so far. So I hate to leave Dame off, but who am I putting over it? Luka's been tremendous, especially now since over the last few weeks he's been hitting the three ball. With him hitting the three-pointer, there's no stopping him. And he also gives you the rebounds and assists, of course. And then Steph is just Steph. Steph's doing Steph things. He is living up to his reputation, or as I call him, the best little man, the best under-the-rim player ever. He's showing us why right now. So Donovan Mitchell, also a little bit of regret. I'd put him right behind Dame. But it is the All-Star game, so I'm happy with my ballot. You got any issues?
I have some issues with you calling 6'3" Steph Curry a little man. But with your ballot, Chris,
he's a little
major
man.
Quibbles. And trust me, I like to mix it up with you, as you know. But I think you did a good job here. Damian Lillard obviously is the best guy not on the list. He's a tremendous player, and not just because he works out of my gym in the offseason. Damian Lillard has been carrying on his back Portland, but I just can't see him taking a position here over any of the five guys you mentioned. Now, in the East, when we get to that later in the show, we're going to have some words.
Well, I thought you were getting smarter. I was about to give you a compliment. I'm rubbing off on you, but I guess not.
Hey, First Things First listeners. I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com. Reimagine for the modern sports fan. Go ahead, download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, as well as the televised version of this show, just a click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. So download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com.
Sunday on Fox, the NASCAR Cup Series returns to Daytona as Chase Elliott looks to defend his win at the 14-turn race course. All the action starts Sunday at 3 Eastern right here on Fox and on the Fox Sports app. All right, speaking of Daytona, fresh off a crazy Daytona 500 finish, we've got champion Michael McDowell joining us now. Good morning, Michael, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you guys so much. It's unbelievable. I mean, you just called me a champion. Can you believe that?
I can believe it, man. It was a great race. You definitely came through. Tell us, where were your emotions at after winning the Daytona 500 for your first Cup Series victory?
I mean, just the initial raw emotion, you're just overwhelmed. I mean, you don't even know what to do. You're just got so much flowing through you, that excitement. And then shortly after that, maybe an hour or two after that, you just are thankful, man. I'm so thankful that I get to race in NASCAR. and be one of 40 of the drivers that get to compete on Sunday. You know, to write my name in the history books as a Daytona 500 champion, I mean, it's just overwhelming and humbling. So the emotions have been all over the place, you know, from just pure joy and excitement to just gratitude and thankfulness. It's just been an awesome, 48 hours.
So Michael, like, if we're being honest, a lot of us spectators watching weren't expecting you to win, but how was the preparation and what was that preparation like and how confident were you leading up to Sunday?
Well, Daytona's always been a very good track for our race team and for myself. And, you know, I think I have 7 top tens there. And so we're probably not in the conversation a lot to win the race, but we've been in that top 5 position. And that's what it's all about, especially at Daytona, is you have to be in position on that last lap. You got to be in those top 2 or 3 rows. And I knew that we had a good plan and we had a good strategy. We worked with our Ford teammates. Our Ford Mustang was super fast that night. And so we knew that we had, you know, the ingredients to get into position and come to the white flag. We were in that third spot, you know, with my Ford teammates, felt like we had, you know, a good plan, and it just all worked out. I mean, I came off of turn 2, had a big run, pushed Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano blocked the pass. Brad and Joey got together, the seas parted, and I came right through the middle. And so, I felt confident that we could be fast and we could run up there. You always plan on winning. I mean, I show up at the racetrack. That's what I go there to do, just like, you know, the 40 other drivers. But, you know, the reality of it actually happening is so small. And so to finally do it, it's just amazing.
Well, Michael, what does a win like this mean for your legacy in the sport? I mean, you're joining all these legendary names on that winner's roll.
Yeah, that's the part that's so humbling. You know, when I think about myself, I'm like, man, I don't think they should write my name next to a Petty or an Andretti or an Earnhardt. I don't belong in that conversation. And so, you know, to know that we will be and forever a Daytona 500 champion and to write our name into the history books, it's been a long journey for me and that makes it so worthwhile.
Michael, you've been a good driver on the Super Speedway track running going into Sunday, but what makes you so good at the high banked runs and different things? And just talk about this experience, and I see it all over your face, like the smile, the elation, like just talk and allude to that.
Well, you know, I think what makes me run well at those racetracks is when I first got into NASCAR, I really did not like the super speedways. You know, it's a unique style of racing and I didn't enjoy it. And so what I did to kind of reverse that is I just became a student. I started studying those races and I found a trend, and the trend was the same 10 guys are at the end of these races every single year. And so I started studying what they did and how they approached the race. And I watched video and I looked at data. And I just put the time and effort into it to try to figure out what makes Denny Hamlin so good at Daytona. You know, what makes Joey Logano so good at Denny, you know, at Daytona, and what do these guys do and what are they thinking? And so I just try to put myself in their shoes and become a student. And that, you know, that was a game changer for me. And as far as, you know, the emotion, you know, what makes this so rewarding is I've lost 350 times and I've only won once. And so that grind and that persistence and, you know, the ups and downs that it's taken to finally get a win, and not just a win, a Daytona 500 win, you know, just makes it worthwhile. It's just unbelievable.
Speaking of the grind and patience, there was a 5-hour, 40-minute rain delay. We saw guys going to Panda Express, McDonald's to get food for themselves and their crew. What did you do to stay calm during that delay?
You know, that's where experience kicks in. You know, I've seen these rain delays. You know, our sport's not new to this. You know, being an outdoor sport, when it rains, you know, it's tough for us. But, you know, for me, I try to stay in the game. I try to stay focused and not let, you know, the energy fall too low. And so I just hung out, you know, made a sandwich, you know, had a little bit of a time to study. You know, even though we only did a handful of laps, I wanted to see what happened in that wreck and how to avoid it. And, you know, you just try to stay mentally in the game. And as soon as you kind of put your guard down, that's normally when they say, all right, back to your cars, and you kind of, you know, scramble. So I try to stay pretty focused, you know, during that time.
Michael, so there are so many of us that aren't drivers professionally like yourself, and we feel like we are the best drivers on the road, but like you obviously have in so many in your field an elitism to what you do. But to avoid any wrecks or any and everything in such an unpredictable race, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's so much reaction and instinct and hand-eye coordination. And you know, a big part of it is your vision and where you're looking. And if you're looking at the wreck, you are going to drive right in it. And when this happened right here, I'm looking at that hole. I'm not looking at Brad. I'm not looking at Joey. I'm not looking at where their cars are spinning. I am looking at that hole and where I can go to miss it. And, you know, your eyes really determine what you're going to do. And so you have to be laser focused, and you can't lose that focus, not even for a millisecond.
Michael, congratulations again, man. Thank you for waking us up early with us, and good luck the rest of the season.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Congrats. It's awesome. I can't tell you how cool it is to be a Daytona 500 champion.
We can see it in your face, believe me.
Yes.
That's thank great. You guys.
Hey, First Things First listeners, it's Charlotte Wilder here to tell you about my new podcast with Mark Titus called The People's Sports Podcast. It comes out every Thursday, and Mark and I take one of the big stories of the week, and then we go off on tangents you never saw coming. This might mean that we start talking about the Dodgers winning the World Series and end up wondering if Knicks fans deserve happiness, or begin with LeBron's greatness and end up drafting our ultimate beer league softball team made up of old athletes. Whatever it is, the only rule of the show is that it has to be fun and funny, because these days we could all use as many laughs as we can get. So check it out wherever you get your podcasts and come down weird sports rabbit holes with us. We can't wait to have you. Now, back to First Things First.
Sunday on Fox, the NASCAR Cup Series returns to Daytona as Chase Elliott looks to defend his win at the 14-turn road course. All the action starts Sunday at 3 Eastern right here on Fox and on the Fox Sports app. All right, we're back talking Carson Wentz. The news broke yesterday that the Eagles are trading Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts for a third-round pick and a conditional second next year. Pretty shocking end to the Wentz era in Philly. Eagles spent 5 draft picks to acquire Wentz in 2016 and just gave him a $128 million contract 20 months ago. So, Greg, who won the Wentz trade, the Eagles or the Colts?
Well, it was the Colts. When you look at what Carson Wentz can potentially provide, if he gets back to what we saw, then the Colts won this trade. They only had to give up a third round pick this year, which would equate to the 85th overall pick, and then a conditional second round, which can turn into a first round, which for the Colts, it'll be a later pick if the Colts make that playoff push or if Carson Wentz plays over 75% of the game. So when I look at what the Colts got, and Carson Wentz won more than anyone in this trade, he gets to go to a guy in Frank Wright who he trusts. And trust, we all know, it's everything in sport. When you're playing a position that is relayed or dependent upon others putting you in position and making sure that you can develop a rapport and a chemistry with someone who's not going to be on the field, I need to know that you're going to listen to me. You're going to allow me to have input. You're going to be vested in my success and not being so focused on who's going to come behind me and potentially take my position. And so I think that plays a lot in why Carson Wentz won. And when you look at the Colts, they need a quarterback. They need a quarterback, and they believe Carson Wentz is that guy. And I'll say this, Carson Wentz, when you look at Phillip Rivers and his numbers, statistically, he threw 68% completion percentage last year, threw for over 4,000 yards. Carson Wentz has only thrown 68% completion percentage one time in his career and thrown for over 4,000 yards one time in his career. But what he gives the Colts, in my opinion, is a quarterback that can make every play anytime you need him to make it, except throwing the interception. That has to come down. Obviously, I truly believe that he can do it. It's just solely as a player, when you see somebody struggling the way Carson Wentz did last year, you got to believe that there is more in him of good than it is bad. I know it was really bad last year, but for the Colts, they believe that he can get back to form of 2018, 2019, where he was pretty good under center. And we all thought he could be special for years to come.
Oh, this is a dream for the Colts. Of course the Colts won the trade. You lose Phillip Rivers, who had a nice season last year, but it was obviously time to go. And you immediately replace him with Carson Wentz. Frank Wright, Carson Wentz, back together again. Carson Wentz is in a comfortable situation. This is what he wanted. This is what the Colts wanted. And they didn't have to give up a lot to get him. And I mean, for a franchise quarterback, that's nothing. This is a great situation for Carson Wentz and the Colts. But for me, the pressure is on now, Carson. This is what you wanted. He didn't want to be coached hard. There was a lot of talk about leadership. He wasn't comfortable with Jalen Hurts. The Nick Foles thing made him uncomfortable. Well, now you're the guy. Now you're not going to get sacked 50 times a season because the offensive line with the Colts is great. You have a running game. You have weapons to throw to and a solid defense. The Colts got their guy. I can't wait to see what happens here, but they definitely won the trade. I just believe now all of the pressure is on Carson Wentz. You can't make any more excuses. Nobody's coming up behind you. You're going to have all the input you need, and you're with your guy, Frank Wright, but the Colts definitely won this trade.
Look, Philadelphia is still taking a $34 million dead cap hit, and they don't know who their quarterback is. They definitely lost this trade. There's no question about it. Now, Joy, you're right. The pressure's on Carson Wentz. If he's ever going to be anything in this league, if he's ever going to get back to what he was in 2017 when he was on track to win an MVP award, it will happen in Indy. This is a perfect situation for him. It's a completely fresh start, which is absolutely what he needed. He's got everything. You mentioned Frank Reich, who was his offensive coordinator in Philadelphia when he had the great year in 2017, Greg. So that's perfect. The offensive line you talked about, Joy. Phillip Rivers was sacked 19 times last year. 19, that's it. Carson Wentz was sacked the league high 50 times in Philadelphia in only 12 games. So a quarterback can't ask for anything more than a clean pocket. And he will have that in Indy. As far as receivers, we'll see if they bring back T.Y. Hilton, who's a very good receiver. But they also remember have Paris Campbell, who was injured, really been injured, you know, most of his two-year career. If he's healthy, and they're thinking he will be for next year, he can be dangerous. Jonathan Taylor, the rookie running back, was third in the league in rushing last year. So you got a run game. You got a top 10 defense. I mean, there's nothing that you don't have there in Indianapolis. And the Colts are looking at it like, we very likely may have our next quarterback, our franchise quarterback, for the next 10 years. So they did awesome in this trade. There's no question about it, Greg.
Yeah, and Joy, I hear you on the pressure being on Carson Wentz, but you got to think, from his perspective, when you're in a favorable situation, when you're in the situation that you have desired, yeah, there may be pressure from the outside, but from inside, he's looking at it like, I got everything I need. There is no pressure. I have others that are going to step up and make plays and make me better. We talk about the sacks. He's going to be sacked more than 19 times next year. And the reason why is because he holds on to the ball a little bit longer than Phillip Rivers, a guy who doesn't extend plays with his legs. He gets rid of the ball, plays with more rhythm. That is not Carson Wentz. He's going to afford them opportunities to extend plays and get the ball down the field, something that we didn't see him do on a consistent basis the last few years. And I'll say this, when you have a quarterback that has struggled, once you start to get him up front and get him protected, and the pocket clears, and he's starting to go through those progressions, and he's not under duress on without it being on his own accord, meaning him getting outside of the pocket, he can exhale. He can go in that huddle, call that play call, and not concern himself mentally with, am I going to be running for my life? And I think a lot of that played into – his bad performances last year. He was doing a lot of running for his life. I'm not trying to make excuses for Carson Wentz, but that was fact. We saw film. We saw the tape. But when you look at where he's at now, you both mentioned it. You laid it out. It is set up for his success. And from the inside of Carson Wentz's lens, he doesn't look at it as pressure. He looks at it as all I have to do is my job.
No, he's in a great situation. We've seen Carson Wentz throw to practice squad guys and make it happen. So I have no doubt that he's going to take a fundamental step up just with the weapons around him. But when I talk about pressure, he is not somebody who can handle adversity off the field. Now, that's not really something I think he's going to face in Indianapolis, but we saw what happened when he got injured and Nick Foles won. He started to fall apart. Then they bring in Jalen Hurts, and that's a whole other emotional situation. This is a competitive league. It's the most competitive business in the world, professional sports, maybe. You're going to have people trying to take your job. That's how this works. It's what have you done for me lately? You got to go win. And Philadelphia is a place that demands winning. So it's going to be a comfortable situation for Wentz. So I understand what you're saying is no pressure in that situation. But to me, I'm watching because he's been compared to Dak Prescott. He's had this MVP season. I want to see what you do now. You're in your nice little comfy situation. You got your Snuggie on. You know what I'm saying? You got everybody around you. Keep everything nice and comfortable. You're going to have time. So now it's on you, Carson. That's how I feel about this situation. I'm excited to see it. I think the Colts won the trade. He's going to have everything he needs. So go paint your masterpiece.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Philly. Obviously, they took the L on this one, but let's look at it this way. Maybe they've cleaned up their locker room situation, too. You talked about some of Wentz's issues, Joy, and he had them. You know, there was talk for years about some of the players not believing in him, some guys being put off by his attitude or his personality. Obviously, his relationship with Doug Peterson fell apart toward the end. And Jalen Hurts is already working out with the quarterbacks before they traded Carson Wentz. He's working out with the other receivers, I should say. And so that shows that Hurts had already taken over that locker room from Carson Wentz. So you do at least have a positive vibe in Philadelphia. The question is, how good is Jalen Hurts? He reminds me a lot of Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott, at least earlier in his career, and maybe even still now, was not a guy that could make a mountain out of a molehill. He couldn't take, you know, guys who were only adequate and be great himself. So Jalen Hurts, I don't see that in him either. He's a leader. He's a guy who's got the trust and the respect of his locker room mates. He's a guy that can make plays with his legs and at times with his arm, but he hasn't yet shown you that he's a franchise quarterback. So that's going to be the big question. And, you know, there's reports that Philadelphia may even draft a quarterback with the sixth pick. I'm not mad at them for that. There's nothing wrong with some competition. I think Jalen Hurts is strong enough mentally to handle the competition. And if he's not your guy, maybe you get your guy at quarterback in the draft. If he is your guy, he beats out whoever you draft at quarterback. So I think that's the positive you take away if you're Philadelphia, but overall it is an L. I think if they had had their druthers, they would have kept Carson Wentz and had that competition in the training camp between Wentz and Hurts and let the best man win. But there was just too much bad blood there with Wentz. It was time for him to go.